Today on Movie Wellers, we're going to review the movie Frances Ha and Before Midnight. It's time for Movie Wellers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wellers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello, hello.
Good evening.
Greetings.
So, I thought we'd read out, we got a piece of viewer or listener. I say viewer. Why do we always say viewer? No one views a podcast.
Because we're kids of the 70s.
I know, but we should have fixed this.
70s? Try 80s.
Okay, we're kids of the 80s. We were born in the 70s.
More like 60s. No.
But we did have a message from one of our listeners. He's on our Facebook website, Joseph Bridges. Hi there, Joseph. Thank you for writing in. And he writes in saying, I really enjoy your podcast, and I was wondering if you ever had done an episode where you explained your philosophy on being a film critic. I always like to know from what life angles critics see films and how this influences their reviews. So, no, I don't think we've ever discussed that on Movie Wallace. And I think the real reason is we'll probably be very disappointed when you find out exactly what qualifies us to be a critic. But anyone want to have a go at answering? Yazdi, Rashmi?
Sure. I mean, first of all, I don't think of myself as a critic. I think I'm more a reviewer, you know, just like everybody else.
What's the difference?
I think critic is somebody who is...
criticizes.
Yeah, criticizes. And somebody who is... You know,
a subject matter expert. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're an expert.
No.
You know more about movies than anybody I know.
Yeah. Well, I think you're pretty much. Than, yeah.
but you know what I mean. So I think a critic is somebody who is like, you know,
an authoritarian,
you know, who wields like lightning and thunder. Your movie is crap, you know, that kind of. but I think I'm doing this just because I love movies so much. And I think of all the art forms, and it's hard to say this without sounding corny, but I think of all the art forms, movies to me comes the closest to representing and understanding life for me. And I think there are different schools of thought about, some people think you should just review movies purely from a perspective of where the movie sits. I think for me that those kinds of reviews are never interesting. For me, the most interesting ones are where you bring your life's experiences, because how I react to a movie depends on what I've been through in my whole life, and especially what is going on in my life at that time. So I think it's good to talk about movies and explaining what's your personal basis for liking or disliking it. And I think that's more interesting to the person who's listening about it. But what do you guys think?
What he said. No, I think I agree with Yazdi. I think our job is that we try and review the movies and maybe help people know what's out there and make informed choices about what's going on and where to spend your money. It's not a cheap experience going to the movies anymore. And when there's so much different technology now, IMAX, 3D, you know, all of these different ways to watch a movie, Netflix, what's the best way to spend your time? You know, what's valuable for you? I think that's. I hope we're doing a service to the people who listen to us.
And
it's fun to chat with you both about movies. I love chatting to you both about movies, because it's always surprising and shocking to me what we all agree and disagree on.
Yeah.
So that's the most fun for me, is just chatting to you guys about it.
That's true. I think I would have thought by now I could guess what you guys think about a movie.
It's so unpredictable.
And just to reiterate, one of our major Movie Wallahs rules is that on coming out of a movie, we never discuss any of it, which is really hard sometimes because Rashmi and I are married. So, like, we'll come out of a movie.
Oh, yeah, to each other.
Yeah, we always forget to add that little detail. One of the fun things I think about doing the podcast is, you know, kind of keeping tight-lipped and then just getting a real reaction going, because I feel that way we at least keep the conversation somewhat fresh for people if we haven't pre-discussed the movie. So,
yeah.
But, you know.
And I am always excited to hear what you think about something.
Yeah.
Because it is unpredictable to me when you'll like something and when you won't, so.
Right. See, like, I would have never guessed that Rashmi would love Holy Motors. Never. Motors. She loved Holy
it.
Motors.
I'd
be like,
loved it.
Not in 100 years.
And I would have never guessed that anybody liked Holy Motors.
Oh, shush. I also think it's good because there's so many people. I mean, the internet has opened things up amazingly. I mean, just look at what Roger Ebert did with his blog. I mean, he was answering to people like you and me, and you could have these very cerebral, intelligent discussions with people. And I think just to further that discussion within the purview of people online is kind of fun. And I think also, I'll shut up, but
Wow, you took that question and ran with it.
I did. I also think it's great to be able to champion movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, little movies that I've never heard of, you know. That
Holy Motors.
Holy Motors, you know, little movies that people may never heard, may not have heard of, or may not bother to go and seek out in the one cinema that plays art house movies. I think it's good to be able
or
to champion those
to
movies.
Or even straight to DVD these days, you know, straight to Netflix. Yeah. I think the other thing for me is that, you know, I grew up in a household where film was part of our life. My father was actually a film distributor of Bollywood movies in England. So he worked for a company called Anglo Overseas. And so film was around us all of the time. And I think I've mentioned it on previous podcasts. We often had reels of movie classics lying around the house, and
that stuff's explosive.
It's a fire hazard.
Right. I think it's been got rid of now, but I mean, you know, we always had film and stuff around us
and movie stars too.
Yeah, like we
Bollywood movie stars.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting way of growing up. So I think film's always been a part of my life, and I love the fact that film can open up your mind to ideas that you may have never considered before. I think documentary is really powerful at showing you sides of an argument mm-hmm. that you may never have considered. And I think it's a great form of escapism. If you're having a really crappy day at work and you put something like Clueless on or Bedazzled, there's no way you can't feel in a better mood by the end of it.
Yeah. And I would absolutely reiterate that last point. I mean, if I'm miserable, almost nothing works like, you know, a few movies that resonate with me. I mean, there are a few movies I'll just go back to and watch, and you know, I may not be joyous, but I will be less miserable. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are very few things in life you can say that about.
Cool.
I hope that answered Joseph's question.
Yeah, that's who we are. Joseph, thank you for writing in and asking. It's really great to get some interaction with our listeners. So yeah, if you've got any other questions for us, do send them in. Always happy to address them on the show. But anyway, that's almost 10 minutes into the podcast, and we have two movies to review today. So let's jump into our first one, which is Frances Ha.
Frances Ha is the latest film from Noah Baumbach, the writer-director of The Squid and the Whale, Margot at the Wedding, and most recently Greenberg. This time around, he has teamed up with Greta Gerwig for screenwriting duties. Greta Gerwig also plays the gamine title character Frances Ha, a 20-something free spirit living in contemporary New York City. The film is a documentation in the life of Frances as she tries to navigate, with mixed degrees of success, her attempts at adulthood, friendship, gainful employment, and relationships with those around her. Shot in beautiful black and white, the film also stars Adam Driver, Michael Ziegen, and Mickey Sumner, she who is the daughter of the musician Sting.
Oh.
So I saw Frances Ha was the first movie I saw at last year's Toronto Film Festival. It really started off my festival experience exceptionally well. But I'll let you guys comment on the film before I come around.
So I've been dying to talk about this one because it's been like you, Yazzie, you saw it last year. We saw this probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And I've been dying to talk about this one. I think this is a delightful film, reminiscent of last year's Lola Versus, which also starred Greta Gerwig, but way better.
Yeah, sure. It reminded me a lot of Lola Versus.
Really?
But only in that it was a very similar character played by Greta Gerwig here. But this movie had a lot more... It was a lot more competently assembled. It had a lot more charm. It had a lot more wit to it. I think it was a very sharp movie about, you know, the 20-something... you know, what am I going to do with my life type of situation. So, but it worked really well, and it just charmed the pants off me. I came out just with a huge smile on my face, even though the movie had some dark moments. I think it really made me feel warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, I mean, there are several things to love about this movie. I think it's almost a disservice to call it a coming-of-age movie because I think it's so much more than that. And I think, for one thing, the movie is very risky in that it almost doesn't have a plot when you think about it. You know,
what happened here?
What happened?
Nothing happened.
It's 2 hours of just following what happens in her life, and yet it feels lifelike because that's how our lives are. I mean, our lives don't follow a particular plot. Things happen, people come, you visit some places, you go back, you miss some connections, you know, and so it felt, I think it was risky to make a movie which is so deliberately meandering, but it pays off. I think the script here is exceptional. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some, it's very sharp, like you said, and there are some pieces of dialogue which, you know, if you laugh too loud, you almost miss what follows afterwards. You almost can't laugh too much because you'll miss all the best parts. And it has a feeling of genuineness. It's very difficult to make a film with a character like that, which doesn't come across as flaky or too precious. And this Greta Gerwig character, Frances Ha, is not very necessarily likable. She's kind of all over the place. And yet, you kind of fall in love with this character. So I think this movie does a lot of things which are very difficult to do. It takes them and kind of makes them work.
I mean, I think to your point about what was the plot, to me, it was a feeling more than a story arc. And I think for me, the feeling it captured was a quarter century crisis, which I think a lot of us go through. And when I say that, I mean, it's about growing up and growing in different directions to those around you. But in addition to growing in different directions, it's growing apart from the people who you thought would always be there and then resisting it. And for me, what came across was almost a love story in a non-romantic sense and a non-sexual sense between Frances and her friend. And that's what really resonated with me, because it wasn't necessarily a coming of age, but it was a realizing that life is happening, this is it. And really coming to terms with that. And I think that's what it captured so beautifully.
So there was a Q&A session after the Toronto Film Festival, after the screening there. And Greta Gerwig was there, and so was Noah Baumbach, the co-writer and the director. And one of the questions asked...
And her partner.
And now they're dating, yes.
Right.
Yeah, and I didn't know they were dating.
Sorry, that was my E.
That's your my E news. But somebody asked her a question like, you know, this is one of the first times she's written a script, and what was it about this story which interested her? And she said that this film interested her because it is based on something which is seldom seen in movies. And that's exactly what you pointed out, which is this unrequited love between two people who have a relationship that is not sexual. So, you know, in many ways, the movie is about her and her best friend and how they drift apart. And there is nothing sexual about it. It's really about her coming to grips with the fact that her best friend has followed a different path.
Right.
And I have never seen
her
a movie like this.
Her best friend has grown up.
Her best friend has grown up, right. So, but I've never seen a movie which kind of focuses on that. It's unusual, and I like that.
I mean, there was a film, the one with those two girls, the call thing. Remember the one we saw with the two girls where they set up the line, the sexual phone line?
Oh, yeah.
That was a much more inferior. Call for a good time. Yeah, that one. I mean, that was a romance between two girls
in a sense. You're right.
But way, way inferior to this. I mean, it has been done. The one thing I'd say is that I think the film has holes in it. And I think it's a little bit precious. And the fact that Greta Gerwig dances in every film that she does, it's a bit twee and, you know, lovely and sweet. But I think, like you were saying, Joe, there are enough real moments that really bring you back to earth with a thud that keeps it on a good footing, I think.
You mentioned the word or the phrase midlife crisis just now. I mean,
quarter life.
It really is the 20-somethings version of a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
I think that was my take-home message. And I didn't pick up on the relationship angle until you just mentioned it, but it's absolutely about that. But, you know, for me, it was all about Gerwig's character going through this, you know, what does life, love, everything mean before you found yourself, you know, because she didn't know who she was, right?
She's very immature in many ways.
And before you have it all figured out. So I like the journey that took. What about Gerwig here? Because... Oh, sorry.
No, I think I was going to say the same thing. If this movie doesn't make a star out of Greta Gerwig, nothing will. I mean, she's wow.
Effortlessly charming. But aren't you... I'm a bit worried about her getting typecast here. Because she really plays this same sort of ethereal, you know, sweet
lost.
But... kind of intelligent and lost character in a lot of movies.
Damsels in Distress, Lola Versus. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but I...
And I mean, I love her to bits, don't get me wrong, but I just think she's finding this little box, which is a very comfortable place for her as an actress, and she's very good at it. I just worry that this is going to be it for Greta Gerwig, and when she, you know, turns 35 and these kind of roles no longer...
Yeah, like you can't see her opposite, you know, Bradley Cooper in something.
Maybe. She has
that would be great.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, what did you guys think of the fact that the film was in black and white? That's an interesting choice, I think, to make.
It kind of reminded me of... So the movie, as it is very Woody Allen-esque.
Yes, in that, exactly, you know, the words I had written down.
It's all about neurotic people living in New York, right? Which is every movie of Woody Allen, except some of his latter one, more recent ones. But it kind of reminded me of Manhattan, which was also shot in black and white. And I think, actually, it looks beautiful.
It
makes... Even certain parts of, like, Brooklyn, you know, and then certain parts of the movie are shot in Paris. I mean, that I think it really adds to the movie. It was a bold choice.
I mean, I thought it had the potential to be a bit, what's the word, kitschy?
Yeah.
But it worked out here. It worked in their favor. And like you were saying, I mean, one of my notes here that I made on the movie as we came out of it was, the movie seems to make love to New York with every frame, every single composition, because it's like spending like a really great summer in the city. I mean, that's how I felt coming away from it. I can't remember what season it was set in, but it had that really
matter.
My favorite time in New York is that kind of, you know, late summer, early fall, and it really felt like that.
I liked that it had a great music score. It had really good music. For some reason, I can't remember any of the music in it, but I made notes. Love the music. The music in this film is so good.
I don't even recall. Was it like a jazzy kind of
music? No, it was kind of like 70s and 80s music, but it was so fun. It just seemed to follow that essence of fun in the movie, even though there was some, you know, dark subject matter.
I mean... I almost hesitate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, because it might ruin the overall experience of the movie for somebody who hasn't seen it. But it's very difficult to do a satisfying but not overdone ending. And this movie has, in my opinion, just the right tone to that last scene. It really worked for me. Just the right. A little bit heavier and it would have just crumbled.
Yes.
And yet it's the perfect ending.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's wrap this one up since we're talking about ending. So, Yazdi, you go first since you saw this first.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like about this movie. It might frustrate some people who expect, you know, a traditional structure to a movie. But I think if you're feeling the slightest bit in the mood for something charming and offbeat, this movie pretty much is it. I think it's a definition of delight on screen. I give it 8 out of 10.
Joe.
Yeah, this movie is seemingly about nothing happening whatsoever, but it didn't really matter to me at the end. In the end, because the experience of it was just so joyful. I had a wonderful time watching this movie. I don't hesitate to recommend it to anybody. Gets an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, another sweet, great Greta Gerwig film about the perils of growing up and leaving your youth behind. A film about how we perceive ourselves by ourselves. I think this is a wonderful movie for a rainy Sunday afternoon or any time. 8 out of 10.
Frances Ha gets a thumbs up from all of us.
Yep.
That doesn't happen very often these days.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our second movie of the week, which is Before Midnight. And I think I'm going to introduce this one, so I'll take a shot. So Before Midnight is the third installment in the series of movies made by Richard Linklater, starring Ethan Hawke and Judy Delpy. The first two installments were Before Sunrise, which was when this couple got together for the first time. The second movie was set 9 years later, where the two of them reunited in Paris. And this movie, Before Midnight, is set 9 years after the second one. But not only set 9 years after, it was actually filmed 9 years after. So it's very... I can't think of another movie trilogy that is set 18 years apart in this same way. It's kind of a unique situation. The characters have genuinely aged. Before Sunrise and Before Sunset are two movies that Rashmi and I hadn't actually seen before watching this movie. And if you have any interest in this, which I hope you will at the end of this review, definitely take the time to see both of those. But guys, what do you think of this one? This is one, by the way, Rashmi and I saw at South by Southwest. So I think we have spoken about it previously in an episode. But anyway.
Yasti, you go first.
What do you think of Before Midnight?
So this happens altogether rarely in movies, but have you ever seen a film that seems to have been made exclusively for you, like personally for you? Before Midnight made me feel that way. I mean, it's the kind of film where you struggle not to use superlatives to describe it. I mean, how does one even talk about this movie without raving about it? Okay, there's one thing I want to say up front. I seriously doubt that there's going to be another film that's going to come out this year which has better writing. Period. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they should just hand out the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay right now in May 2013 to Before Midnight. This movie has some of the best script, best writing I've seen in movies. And this is one of the best movies I've ever seen, period, at any time. It's that good.
I completely agree with Yazdi. So I wrote down OMG. I've never taken the time to watch Before Sunrise or Before Sunset, like Joe said. We watched this at South by Southwest. It was interesting seeing the third part, kind of like Iron Man, last in two episodes ago, going in and watching the last of the trilogy or the third one in a trilogy. But it didn't take anything away. However, we were so inspired by watching Before Midnight that we actually came back and watched Before Sunrise and Before Sunset. And these films have just blown me away. I'm absolutely blown away. And now having watched the first two, I want to watch Before Midnight again. But just having watched the first two has added on at least another 2 points to my score. This was an amazing movie. This is so incredible. Loved it.
Yeah, I had absolutely no idea what to expect going into this. We saw it at South by Southwest and it was, to my mind, going to be just another movie. I wasn't really familiar with Linklater's work. Mm. He's directed a few kind of well-known movies, but I don't think he's had any kind of blockbuster. He's kind of one of these offbeat director, small movie. Slacker, I think, is one of the ones that he made that was perhaps a bit more commercially well-received than the others. But yeah, this movie blew me away. I mean, I was so floored. The opening scene, just to get an idea of how well executed this movie is, the opening scene is a single take that goes on for 15 minutes. And I'm not talking about one of these artificial kind of, you know, chop camera angles here and there, same scene. This is one camera on two people for 15 minutes as they have a discussion, as they drive around a situation. And there are no breaks. There's no kind of clever cuts or anything. In terms of acting, they had to learn 15 minutes of dialogue. This is not improvised dialogue. This is stuff that they learned, the stuff that was written as a conversation. This was something that was filmed in one go. I mean, I just marveled at the filmmaking, if nothing else. But then you throw in together the excellent writing, the performances, which require such extraordinary commitment from both of these actors that I had no idea how the two of them actually achieved it. Just marvelous stuff.
The entire and all the movies, all three, they're all made out of these ridiculously long shots.
Yeah.
Okay. And the first scene that you talk about, when they're leaving the airport, they're driving in this car through the Greek countryside. They have two little young actors. Imagine they have two little young girls who are at the back of the car who are supposed to be sleeping. I don't know if they were really doped and sleeping or if they were acting as being sleeping. And they're having this full-out conversation for 15 minutes. I guess people do it in live theater all the time, but still to be able to capture that, you know, so effortlessly, yeah.
I mean, I think, again, you know, this is, you know, you've talked already, Yazdi, about the great writing. But to me, it's about the chemistry and the realism that these two characters bring to life. I mean, Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy aren't a married couple. There is nothing in this movie that wouldn't make you believe that they aren't, because the conversations, it's a strange concept to watch 2 hours of people talking. No action, really. Just two people in a conversation for the most part. That's 80% of the movie. And the ebbs and flows of a conversation that's captured so naturally and then the kind of the natural flow into an argument or a disagreement, and then the natural how you come out of that and laugh about something, but then you're right back in the argument. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, how do they do that? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and I guess we should warn people, if you're the kind of shallow person, and I'm going to say shallow person, who is turned off by the idea of watching people talk for 2 hours, then stay the hell away from this movie. But for everybody else, it's going to be a great treat. I mean, there's nothing else. There's just people talking in this movie. But
judgmental Yazdi.
Exactly. I mean, fine.
He's back.
You can't be my friend if you don't like this movie.
Shallow if you don't like this movie.
Yes, you
there
are.
There's nothing to you.
Exactly. And there were walkouts. There were a couple walkouts when I watched this movie. And I think it's expectations. People come and expecting
that blows my mind, because from the moment this movie opened, I was riveted to my seat.
Right. Can you not be fascinated by what these people have to say? And I think one of the great achievements of this movie is it captures in a very naturalistic way what it is like to have a relationship right now in the way we live right now. It's hard for a movie to speak to the universe through the exceptions of a couple individuals. You know, these are two characters who have kind of had difficulty coming together, but now they've been together for a while and they have to kind of wake up and smell the coffee and realize that, you know, the person who is perfect for you still comes with some imperfections. And how do you deal with that? And, you know, I'm not married, but I it just felt so real to me how somebody who you love dearly, you know, can also tremendously annoy you. And
it was real.
Resentments.
It
and
was real.
Little things that are said.
We were laughing.
And how you push each other's buttons.
Yes.
And, you know, there's nothing cute about it. They go there. You know, fights are real.
That's one of the notes I made. I mean, it takes everything on, you know.
Right.
Life. Love, wants, needs, desires, regrets, you know, families, hopes, dreams, everything is tackled here in a conversational sense. And it doesn't pull any punches. I mean, it's uncomfortably real. I think, you know, as a married couple actually watching the movie, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, oh God, I sound like that sometimes, you know. It's like, oh my God, that's exactly how it happens, you know. So really, like...
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I know we're not reviewing the other ones, but I was telling Yazdi that, you know, when we had watched Before Sunrise, Joe and I had watched it through the week, and I had missed the last 30 minutes because I was so tired. And I said, look, you carry on watching and I'll catch up. And I came home from work on a Friday evening and I put on the last 30 minutes and I literally sobbed my way through the last 28 minutes. I mean, like, and I'm not just talking like, you know, tears down your cheeks. I'm talking about lip quivering, all out, body shaking, sobbing, because these are such amazing movies. They really get you. I mean, they just worm their way inside and they're real. It's unbelievable. These people deserve Oscars.
Yeah, what a travesty that they've never been nominated. I think these movies have always been so small. They made the first one. Nobody really cared about it. A few people watched it. It was a small film. Then they did the second one. And I think the cult of the movies was just growing at that point, and it still was kind of under the radar. I hope this one finally gets them the recognition. I mean, I think, considering how long those shots are so long, and knowing, I mean, Linklater is very clear in every single one of his interview that this movie is 0% improvised. Okay, nobody made anything up on the spot. Everything was scripted.
Right, and that was actually one of the questions that came up in the Q&A after the film. So we were lucky enough to have a Q&A with Linklater after the movie, and that's the first question that someone asked, you know, was how much was this film improvised? And he said none of it was improvised. It was a collaboration between the three, you know, Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy, and himself. And it takes, I think it took 5 years to make in terms of the screenplay. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the commitment to these characters.
I really hope that at least this year, Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke get the recognition. I mean, Julie Delpy has been great in other movies, but Ethan Hawke has never been this good, and I don't think he ever will be. But what an achievement.
Yeah.
It's a pity that their timing, I think, is a little off for award seasons. I hate the way that the Oscars work, right? But everything that we start to think about for award season comes out fourth quarter. So I hope this one isn't forgotten about when, you know... I mean, it won't be in my mind. This is easily going to be one of the best movies I've seen this year. I was floored.
Okay. Anything else, or should we wrap this one up?
No, I can talk about this for a long time, but we'll wrap it up. You know, I like that the movie gets philosophical. I like that the movie goes into really, you know, obscure. It has all kinds of weird references that you may or may not get. And at the same time, it has petty, relatable, real life slights in it. And it's, you know, that script. Script is just
and even
just
the other couples around them, like in this one, they did something a little bit different, which is they actually involve a few other people. Mm-hmm. Even those characters were great.
Yeah.
So, Joe, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, just an extraordinary movie. I think in terms of dialogue, writing, acting, directing, it all comes together here. There's an amazing chemistry on set between the two main leads. It all feels so very real. The dialogue, this deep, reflective, poignant dialogue just hits you at every single moment of the movie. So I was sucker punched by this. This gets a 9 out of 10 from me.
Yes, Dee.
So I want to see this film again. I want to memorize all of its dialogue. I want to take a class where someone simply goes over that marvelous lunch scene in Greece and dissects it word by word. I mean, I promised I wouldn't go into superlatives, but I give up. I mean, this movie is as close to perfection as cinema gets. It is effortlessly brilliant and insightful, and I think no true film lover can afford to miss it. It also gets that rare 9 out of 10 for me.
Yes, he wants to have its children.
Yes. I mean, yes.
Yes, he's Julie Delpy, wherever you are. Please write to Movie Wallers now. Rush out and see this one, not because you won't be able to enjoy this on the small screen, but because this is essential viewing for any film lover. This trilogy is possibly one of the best love stories I have ever come across. This will warm your heart and keep you warm forever. I'm going to give this one a 10.
Wow.
This was wonderful. And wonderful as a whole trilogy, as a film
it's on par with the Dark Knight trilogy. That's how high in esteem
wow.
I hold this.
Wow.
For those that don't know, by the way, I'm a complete Christopher Nolan Dark Knight fanatic. So that's high accolade from me.
I mean, this is the thing with, this is the kind of film which gives sequels a good name.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be amazing if we could keep revisiting these two characters every 9 years and we keep making movies? Oh, please, please, I cannot wait for the next one.
So Linklater did kind of allude to that. They did allude to it.
Well, he said they never set out to do that. I think the original movie was just a one-off, but... you know, when they got talking about the project again a few years later, they were like, well, let's see what we can do with this. And so I think they've got that in mind, you know, let's see what can happen here. And it's an interesting project. I mean, like I said at the beginning, there's no set of movies that I know that were spaced in such a way that the stories exist almost in real time at the time that they were filmed.
Well, there's the 7-Up series of documentaries where they follow the same characters every 7 years. But that's a documentary, right?
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Well, let's wrap up our episode for today. Mail at movierollers.com for your comments and feedback. We'd love to hear from you. Twitter.com/movierollers. We do not tweet often, but when we do, it's great. So do follow us on Twitter and facebook.com/moviewallers as well. Join our growing community of Movie Wallers fans. Until our next episode, it's too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well. Go see Before Midnight. Now.